I'll show you guys what
no!
I'm doing. Yeah, this is my bong. I'm giving this to Tar because I'm, you know, I found it's like going through stuff. It's like, I'm sure my parents got it for me. I'm like, I'm not a big fan of like the super deformed or the weird bobblehead kind of things because it's a bobblehead. So I asked him if he wanted it. The Mummy's Tomb. I'm like, yeah, it's a head knocker. There you go.
I like it.
So yeah.
Okay, we've been. We've been recording.
I've got a Phantom and
that's a good intro.
Frankenstein, like that. Of that same line.
Oh, that's cool.
Huh? Yeah. No. Yeah. I saw those. Those are old too. So that's kind of cool.
This is One in the Chamber, Dr. Tar.
This is Professor It's 2:17 a.m. Do you know where your children are?
This is the Midnight Genesis 2:17 Gadfly.
And this is Dr. How do you know she's a witch? Head. And you are experiencing...
Yes, you are.
No,
oh,
but
thank you.
I saw you kiss the mushroom.
I know.
Maybe something else was making you run funny.
Could have been.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's episode, today's episode, late afternoon episode, is all about the movie 2025, Weapons. All right. Weapons was a basically a kind of thriller horror movie about missing children, all from one classroom. All but one child goes missing, and the town turns on the teacher of that classroom. All right. And then the story is then told kind of disjointedly in different little pastiches of the characters, all centered around some sort of force that has made these children leave. Right. I think there's a lot of interesting like ways the film was made in terms of doing like found footage type stuff, surveillance footage, and just, you know, all kinds of numbers and, you know, triangulations, and then, you know, just the whole 217, you know, every one of them at 217 had gone. And what Genesis 217 is, what, don't eat the apple or you'll probably die, you know, or something like that. Isn't that what Genesis 217 is? It's about the Adam and Eve and the apple.
Yeah, I had no concept of that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
From the movie, not at all. I don't know the Bible.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think it's, you know, the eating of the poison apple or whatever is not, it's what the, yeah, it's, again, I think it's a loose thing, but I think it's purposefully done at 217, huh. You know what I mean? So,
well, if it connects with the the bastardization of the fruit as becoming an apple, then I could also see how that would make a connection to the main antagonist here, the villain.
Gladys.
You know, and think of Disney terms, what an apple would be like, you know, in like Cinderella or Snow White, you know.
The poison apple, yeah.
Yeah, so I can totally see that if that thread runs true. That would make sense.
Yeah. Well, and there you could probably go back to all of like Timothy 2:17, and there's all kinds of different ones. But anytime I see two and a colon and a number, I'm always looking at a filmmaker going, are they doing something with the Bible? You know what I mean? Because it seems to be a theme that a lot of Western literature and filmmakers like to do, just to throw like an Easter egg in there. But yeah, I saw this movie a while ago, and I had heard all kinds of good things about it. And so when I first watched it, I was like, I thought it was really cool. I just liked the way it was made. I thought it was crafted really well. I didn't think it was like awesome. You know what I mean? Like, I was not like completely blown away. I just enjoyed the experience. It was kind of weird. There was a lot of like neat little scenes in it and stuff. And you know, I like how it kind of played out, where it didn't try to be too clever. It just was straight up what it was.
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah. I think that's what I liked about it.
Which I thought. And Amy Madigan as Gladys, the aunt, fucking amazing.
Yeah.
She was great. The way they had her presented and made up and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't that look like a lot like Nicolas Cage's long legs?
Yes, it did.
It looked like his mom or something. It's like, holy shit.
Totally did. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, I'll open it up because, you know, I think there's a lot of different things to talk about, you know, like structurally filmmaking and that kind of stuff, storytelling, acting, all those kinds of things. So let's go. Professor Feather.
I like the structure, kind of a, you know, Christopher Nolan, you know, even thinking like his early, like Following and Memento, you know, the way those are laid out. I like that. I like telling that. I really like when they can tell the story, and there's chapters, and each chapter is about a certain person.
Right.
And the first actual chapter is about, what's her name, Janine or whatever her name is, the school teacher.
Right.
What transpires, but then people are introduced during that then their chapters come in.
Yeah,
and everything starts. Well, yeah, that's what I said. It's well constructed script and put together. You know, I really appreciate that a lot. I watched it twice. The first time, my major overall gut reaction was it's too long. But then when I watched it the second time was detached. I wasn't watching it as a moviegoer. And so it was fine. So there's a dichotomy there. Me as a movie watcher, sometimes that's just too long, especially for certain types of movies for me. And because I've been trained my whole life to think of these movies in this box, you know. But having said that, that's what I said. I watched it twice. The second time, totally detached from you know, feelings of the movie. And, you know, I just analyzed the movie. And it's a very, very well-constructed movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of the acting is good. I like the guy that did the cop.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good.
I kept trying to figure out where he was from. He was in Solo. He played the young Han Solo in the Star Wars
film.
So, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, he looks totally different.
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, he looks totally different. Yeah, I only knew it because I looked it up. Because I'm like, where
And that's a good movie, too. It's a lot better than what you might think it'd be if you watch the trailer. Yeah, it's a really fun movie.
But yeah.
But anyway, I'll pass it on. I mean, because there's stuff to talk about.
Right.
I would like to talk some, you know, I would like to get into the story, you know, but not just the technical aspects.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Dr. Head?
I really like this movie. I'm so glad I watched it again. And because I had forgotten about the construction of the storytelling and how you go all these different points of view that kind of like overlap and lay out this big picture. But then you also get the time back and forth of like catch 22 going back in time, non-sequential storytelling, because that's really crucial to when you with the ant,
yep.
You know, And because when you first see her, she's robust and, you know, like, it's in your face. So that I thought was so effective. And so it's like you're wondering why, because there's the mystery aspect. And then every story adds a little bit to that, like solves a little bit of that mystery for you. Like, oh, that's why it's going on. So, yeah, that was beautifully done. And there are some really creepy moments. I love it. It is really effectively creepy. Like when you see the footage of the kids running, the way they run with their kind of hands, like almost like a, like they're like with their arms out and just a weird way to run.
Anyone possessed. Yeah.
When I was a kid, we would run like that. It was called flying. We were flying.
Okay.
Superman. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just love that, you know, spoiler alert, it's, I like that this is a take on Hansel and Gretel, you know, right. I mean, when it boils down to it, it's very similar to that. And, I love the villain. I just think, and I love the end, you know, it's so satisfying. That was, like,
yeah.
It's not what you expect. And again, I will save that, the details for the others, but I just really like the movie. And I think it's just one of the better horror movies that come out, because there's so much more to it than just the horror, but the horror is visceral and it's uncanny and it's creepy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. They put things at stake in a way that makes you invested in the movie, you know what I mean? Especially if you're like a parent or any of that kind of stuff, just the, you know, Josh Brolin's whole thing. And I also think like that nonlinear storytelling can be done very poorly. Like there is a magical balance that happens with that kind of thing. And I think,
absolutely,
I think the director pulled this off beautifully, you know, because it
flows. It really does flow. Yeah. I think it flows.
And it reveals things without being overly clever. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It just reveals things that are important to the story and important from different people's perspective, which
and it just happens to happen in that chapter. I mean, they don't emphasize it, like you.
So, what did you think, Dr. Tarr?
No, same thing you were saying. Just it's set up, it's set up like chapters of a fairy tale and stuff like that. And then she's like the classical witch, you know, without her Gladys makeup on, you know, just being the whole crone type thing. And I enjoyed the movie, and it's a witch and not a vampire, you know.
And the magic she does, I love the spell that she does.
Well, yeah, we should talk about that, because that's rooted in
practical magic.
That's rooted in a couple of different religions, especially,
and
you know,
it almost looks like voodoo too, you know.
It is, mm-hmm. No, that's part of voodoo, so that's kind of one of the things I liked. The kind of it was rooted into something, you know, bigger, but, which comes
recognizable
to the point of Gladys. And one of the things that I thought was interesting the second time, didn't notice it the first time, the dad, mom and dad are talking. Yeah, Aunt Gladys is coming. I haven't seen her for 15 years, mm-hmm. he says. Well, later on, she gets there and she says to, what's his name, Timmy? Mm-hmm. I don't know. He looks like a Timmy to me. He gets there and says, oh, it's been, you know, I haven't seen you since you were a little baby. And he's not 15.
Right. Yeah.
So you start. I'll leave it there, because there's that thread that runs through the whole movie that you can use it to explain a lot of things. Because, one of the things that bothered me early on, the first time I watched it, was I'm going, the fucking cops are just being, no, you know, this is not, you know, this is not good, because it should be, you know, the cops should be really, really busting everything down, everything. But when you start seeing manipulation and whatever she is and how she works, because it's obviously this fucking, and this is where kind of I lost it a little bit. It's this massive psychic fucking thing that she's got going, you know,
magic,
because it seems to encompass everybody to a degree, you know.
Or she can influence people.
That's just, I don't understand how that works, you know. in the grand scheme of things. But there again, she seems to be some kind of almost a timeless.
Right, that's what I.
The vampiric quality, like
she's vampiric. Yes,
she does. It's just it is vampire.
It is vampiric, and it's very much like Stephen
psychic
King.
Vampire. Yes,
yeah, like, vampire. And it's also very primal to the it's the Wendigo. It's communion. You know, you eat and you absorb the energies of that person. And she's kind of feeding psychically, feeding supernaturally, yeah, you know, off of their will,
right,
and.
Right.
And their youth and vitality and so I do love that because these kids are like a battery and they're just feeding her and when she's done she's
and it's
like,
not just the kids either yeah. I mean it's just
yeah it's just like she's right they're ready they'll blow the whole fucking stand she doesn't care she just so, you know she'll just burn the town down yeah yeah, yeah.
Well, when she starts to lose control though you know you start to see certain things when the mom comes out of the house and sneaks into the car and cuts what's her face's hair off you know and you're like yes. Oh that's gonna come back and fuck you but yep. You really know that things are going sideways when she visits Benedict Wong, the principal, and his and she's like, "Ah, it's very peculiar. I just need a bowl. I drink out of a bowl of water." And they're
"Oh, look, okay. I had an accident."
Yeah, all that stuff that they're doing, and then when the whole Benedict Wong, that's where the running with the hands out, when he comes running across that.
Well, and the kids.
Yeah.
Well, the kids, but when
the gas station.
Yeah, when he does,
yeah, that's a really
then you're going
moment.
Okay. We know where that that connection's going, and then they go back and they tell that connection, that story, and that that is so gruesome. Yeah. Him bashing his husband or boyfriend or whatever's facing with his forehead. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The body horror is horrific. Like when she tells how she blackmails the kid into silence.
Oh,
right? Yes. And then the parents like pick up and they start stabbing their faces. That you could feel because it's like, holy fuck. And it just keeps on going and going. Really visceral.
I love
stuff.
The scene.
Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say there, the movie can be extremely graphic, but it doesn't overwhelm everyone with it, though. I mean, it's used.
It's sparingly,
just a couple of places, but, to emphasize a point, and it's just, I thought that was really neat too,
right?
Because I could see it getting carried away, and you know, I mean, just being what it is, and it's just.
I think the whole storyline with the junkie was really interesting because, especially when he breaks into the house, and you know, he sees all the kids in there, and then he finds before he sees the kids, he finds the Campbell soup can. And I'm like, what is the, like they made sure you saw him look at that and go, and then you find out later that he has to feed his parents. And she's like, there's soup. There's always soup there, you know, and then you see him in the store picking out the soup and stuff like that. So all those little connections to me were, were just like somebody had a screenplay, you know what I mean? And they stuck to it. You know, because there was a plan to do this, you know, and I don't even know, did the director also write it? I think he did. Yeah, Zach Cregger. So I talked to somebody about this movie. It was the comic book, Ed Katschke. I talked to him about this and he goes, yeah, I really like that. He goes, but you got to see Barbarians. Because he did the movie Barbarians, and I'm like, I've heard of it, I've not seen it. He goes, you definitely got to see that one. He goes, because it's, he thought it was way better than this one, though he liked this one a lot. So
now I've heard a lot of people say they either hate it or love it. There's like not a lot of in between in it. Yeah, Barbarians. Yeah,
we're not talking like the '80s sword and sorcery guy with the twin fighters. We're not talking about.
You wish.
Oh, we're not.
Damn it.
Yeah, I'm like, that doesn't sound right.
No, and
I've seen that one, and that wasn't particularly good.
Well, it's
on
funny.
Shudder.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Speaking of Barbarians, on Shudder, they had like a campy remake of the '80s Deathstalker movie.
Oh, right.
So they did a remake of it. Oh my God, it's just. Has anybody seen this? It's hilarious.
No. No,
so bad.
The thing about Barbarians is in Natural Born Killers, there was a cut scene that had those two guys from Barbarians, just like chainsawing people.
Oh, the twins.
All over the, yeah, the twins. You know, and they said, and they even claimed that they were the two actors from Barbarians because they had, you know, gone crazy and just started. So it was, and I had the DVD at the one time, and they had that cutout scene, and I'm like, oh, they should have left that in. It's so good. So with weapons, let's get into like some of the particulars of it. So if you haven't seen this, go watch it and then come back and listen to the rest of this. You know, just because it's, you know, I want to talk about shit, not just, you know, dance around it. Here's what I want to know. Let's go around. Dr. Tarr, who was your favorite character or scene? Character scene. I'm asking this of everybody. So if anybody has one right away.
No, I don't know what, if there's a favorite scene. What I enjoyed was it took you from scene to scene. I don't know how to describe this, but it was like the weird stuff was not thrust. It just wasn't there. You kind of float into it, suddenly suggested what's going on. Then all of a sudden, like her dreams. The dreams of where she, you know what kind of creep? Yeah, both of them had it. It's like when they're laying in bed and they're kind of like awake and they look up and she's like looking through the ceiling, smiling or waving or whatever she was doing.
Yeah.
And there was another
jump scare.
And there was another one where that the junkie guy was running out in the woods, you know, he was running, and all of a sudden he's looking off into the distance and she's like in between some trees behind and she's just kind of waving. And she's like the very vibrant colors,
yep.
So she stands out, and he's kind of, you know, what the fuck, you know, just anyway, jumps in his tent, and then the cop comes after him, but stuff like that, I really enjoyed just the more subtle, creepy stuff that was going on in this movie and stuff. It was, I like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be just as disgusting and terrifying, but I just like that. Just that, you know, that out of the corner of your eye stuff.
Yeah.
Just thought that was neat.
What about you, Dr. Head? Did you have like one of those scenes that like really connected?
Yeah, it's the end. It's when the kids start chasing the witch. because it's so funny. The scene's quite humorous to a degree. I mean, her horror that she's experiencing, the terror that she's experiencing, comes off as kind of funny because you're like, yeah, you fucking deserve it, you know. But then you just see what she's doing and how evil she is, and to have that come back on her, it's very satisfying. And the kids are like relentless, like running through windows and breaking windows and running through people's houses. I just love that, this abandonment.
That's yeah. Dark comedy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's Wicked Black. Yes. And it's so
good. I was chuckling through some of that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Both times, even the first time when I watched it, I didn't necessarily like the movie. I went, oh, no, that's pretty cool.
Because I kind of feel, and I like the child, the boy brought it on. You know, by watching her and learning.
Oh, yeah. And
actually, that was kind of the peak of it. That was kind of nice.
Seeing him do that spell and twist it.
Yes.
Yes. Because she's aware of it. Because she hears that snap.
She knows exactly.
Like, oh, no. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Now we can get into the nitty gritty of that, because that really shouldn't have worked. Because her power is not just that. She has some kind of psychic power going on. For all of this other stuff to really make sense, she had to have control over the town. If she's that powerful, just this one thing should not have done it. But I can understand it from a, you know, you got to have something.
Well, here's if it's the spell, and
it was cool that it was a little kid too.
And if it's the ritual, and why it's way better than Harry Potter. Though. You know, I'd much rather see that than Harry Potter any day. But I think I do like that. I mean, if it's the power is in the incantation, or the elements of the blood, or whatever it is, you know, because we see the spell, but we. It worked. We know it works,
there has to be this really intense psychic connection.
Yeah,
and that is just like a conduit to make that connection even stronger. That's the only. I mean, she's like. That's what I said.
Wait, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't think she had that kind of power. I think she was both. She was two things. She had the magic, but she was also a master manipulator. But that's where you see the things unravel when she has to go to, you know, the principal's home to take care of things, because she doesn't have control in that manner. You know what I mean? She's just manipulating circumstances at the same time that she's using magic.
So she has a small area.
Yeah, so she's
limited.
And so then in that scenario, the police forces, they're just fucking shit.
Or
they're negligent. Yeah, they go through the motions, but it's so, when you watch it, it's all wooden. Yeah. It's all very, very wooden. And that's where I disagree with you. I think she has some kind of psychic connection with not just the people that she's manipulating purposefully.
She could,
who becomes her, and here again we can come back to the title, because here's these kids who are and you know, all of these people who are infected can become weaponized, mm-hmm. you know,
yes,
and used as a yes. weapon. Yeah, so I don't know where I'm going with this now, but it was going to be astute.
Yeah, so I said I just think, you know, because you see early on when the kids all first disappear, and they have the one kid, you know, that is with the witch. He's at the police station drinking a Coke with his dad, and his dad is ensorcelled. You know what I mean? Like, his dad is there with him at a time after he has already been, you know, taken over by the witch. So the cops, and I even like that speech where Josh Brolin comes into the captain and he goes, "You need to look into this woman. You are not looking into all this stuff." He goes, "What would you have me do? You know, we've done this, we've done that." But then Josh Brolin goes, "Yeah, but did you know this? Did you know that? Did you know this? Did you know that?" And then Josh Brolin actually goes and becomes a detective, you know, like with all the triangulation and all that kind of stuff, and how that, I love how that connected and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I think it's probably vague enough that it could be, you could look at it either way.
And I think that's what kind of makes it fun. They don't, fuzz the areas where you think there should be a connection to it, and I kind of enjoy that. You know, it's like you fill it in, and it's just like, yeah,
because if she feels like a classic fairy tale witch because of the things that just happened, and the fact that she's like sucking the life out of these children,
it's
Hansel and Gretel. She's just not cooking them that we know of, you know. But
later,
she kind of lures them in and in a safe house, you know. But yeah, there's just so much fun with it, and I agree that the body horror is short lived, and it's mercifully short lived, like, because the scene with the stabbing goes on too long because it feels so visceral, you know. And then, but the scene at the very end when the witch is being just torn apart, literally torn apart by the children, that is so satisfying. That is just like, especially when they start like yanking at her head and just kind of like rip her head in half. It's like, oh, fuck, that's great. Yeah.
I love the fact.
There was another scene where, what's his name? When he was running through the street, Victor, the school principal.
Yeah, Benedict Wong.
Anyway, yeah, and his head smashed, and they kind of like pull back real quick on it, but you see it very vividly. Yeah, just another. They use gore sparingly, but when it was done well, and it was just. Yeah.
They also made his eyes bulge, like when he was. There were certain scenes where his eyes were so bulging. You're just like, oh my god, that is so crazy. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I like the fact that it's Archer Graff, which was Josh Brolin, and what is her name? Julia Garner played Justine Gandy, the teacher.
Justine.
Those two create a bond. Like, there's a bond that happens fairly quickly, you know what I mean, that I really like, especially when Victor Wong comes in, you know, and he's talking to her, and she's like going, oh my god, looking over his shoulder, and that whole thing happens, and the gas is, you know, all these things that you think are going to happen that don't happen. They just let the gas pour over it, and nothing goes on with that. I also thought when the lady came in with the vodka and poured it all over the teacher that she was going to light her on fire. You know what I mean? Because she's sitting there pouring it all over and you know, yeah, getting pissed off because she slept with her.
Well, that's kind of interesting you said that, with the gas going all over,
yeah,
and pouring the alcohol, yeah, alcohol on her. And nothing happens with that. You, yeah, know, you expect some kind of fire, but using it in the two scenes, that's kind of weird. That, anyway, but
yeah, I think my favorite, one of my favorite character pieces was the Benedict Wong one. I don't know why. Like, his character itself in there is just how placating he was, and he's like understanding, but you got to understand this is how things are, you know. And
trying to be, yeah, yeah.
Well, and I love when
political and astute.
They trick you when they think. It make you think he's on the phone with the teacher, Justine, right? And he's really on the phone with Gladys. And Gladys, when they say, yeah, oh, you're 2 o'clock here, oh, show her in. And Gladys walks around the corner and you're like, what the fuck? You know? So I thought that was really good. Again, good stuff. And again, you know, that nice shot from down low where you see the ribbons in his office. And then you see her face looking at the ribbons. You know, and then the kitchen scene later.
And going back to her look too.
Yeah,
that was just.
Well, you were talking about favorite scenes. I mean, you know, that's the obvious one is the when you first see her, and then when you see her revealed, they are like, you know, that's the beauty of her acting. You know, they're like two different people, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, which makes absolutely sense because the Gladys outside is ditzy and frivolous, you know, and you don't even give her a second thought, you know.
Right, because the way she's dressed and the way she looks, she's outlandish.
Yeah, she's outlandish. And that, you know, that's brilliant. But I'll come back to another thing, too, yeah, to bolster my take on this movie. Explain. They have this town meeting, and the grief counselors, you know, and they're spewing their pablum, and all of a sudden, the teacher gets up there, and all of a sudden, the whole place becomes antagonistic toward her. You know, I mean, just out of nowhere, really, and they're saying, "Oh, it's your fault," and. Any rational person would go, why would you fucking blame her? You know? But no, then what happens? She's home. This is some of the nice tension. You know, you hear the knock on her door and she's running around and she goes outside. And what is painted on her car?
Witch.
Witch. Where did that come from?
It came from Josh Brolin. It did, because he got that red paint. They got that paint that he, yeah, wasn't,
but
supposed,
I mean,
to have.
I mean, just, what, yeah. I know, but I mean, where did the concept witch,
right,
of witch,
right,
you know, where did that come from? That's where I think this psychic thing kind of is taking place, manipulating people. It may not be to a large degree, but there again, you know, they're,
or just the opposite. Maybe someone sensed just something.
I get it.
Yeah.
I
like you said about Josh Brolin, I think he's the exception in that she's not, like, maybe not concentrated on him, which, or you know, that could be the flaw in
he's
my
not a threat.
In my surmise that this threat. Is a
or
big
that he's given enough evidence to the what contrary to what his belief was, and he,
yeah, yeah,
is at least willing to adapt his theory based on the evidence, because it was not
anything
out of fear.
To get his son back.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's, his goal is that.
That's his goal. That's his absolute, yeah, goal. There is, yes, no other goal.
Yes.
Yeah, when I said I love the fact that they kind of create his character initially as this kind of bumbler, you know, because he gets the wrong paint, the shit's not done, they,
well,
didn't,
no,
order stuff right.
He's worried about his kid.
He is, but
and
I'm
you
just
know,
saying
he's like sidetracked.
Right, and they are, but there's a moment where he's starting to walk out of that house and he stops and he opens up that map. You know what I mean? And he starts looking. He's like phone towers, and so then he starts looking at this stuff, and then he goes to what Justin Long, his you know, house. And I love the fact that he talks to the wife and she's like, I'm not comfortable with you looking at the video. And so he waits until the husband comes home and tells him, you know, and the next thing you do, there's no like drama between the husband and wife. The next scene is he's watching the video and you're seeing the things. And then he goes and he starts counting the number of concrete slabs in the sidewalk where they walk through. And it's the same as like his you know, and that gave him the direction that he puts the flag in there and he's looking at that stuff and he triangulates it. And then when he shows that map later to the teacher, she goes, I know that house. I was watching that house. And I was told to get away.
No, from it's
that.
Like a her. It's a physical magic. She yes. does. This is not. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the whole they make the whole elaborate emphasis on her. Yeah. Doing the physical magic as opposed to just, you know, thinking or waving your fingers or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
But that was cool. Like old magic, I guess.
Well, and the humor that comes into this where she's talking about, I missed the bus. I had to walk here to Benedict Wong's place, you know, and yeah. I need this. Can I get some water and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, after he's bashed the guy's face in and runs out of the house, she walks out and gets in the van that is her.
Yeah, just waiting. Yeah. She'd driven there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. And just the idea that she interrupted the very big tray of hot dogs and other, like, really unhealthy food, and they had two recliners next to each other, and they were watching some nature show that was really gross. And the one guy goes, oh, this is really gross. I mean, what is those ants doing, you know? I'm just like, again, this is kind of like a Paul Thomas Anderson thing, where they're able to inject that kind of humor into it without being ba-dum-bum, you know what I mean? It's just like that kind of observational humor that I think is awesome. So,
and keep it kind of unsettling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that it is a fine line with all that stuff. And it's just, yeah.
And to get, if we get,
I enjoy the movie. Yeah.
If you get technical too, the filmmaking is really top notch. I think the editing is great. I think the, when they get towards the end and the little kid looks into the aunt's room and he's looking up and her eyes are right there staring at him.
Yeah.
They cut fucking quick. You know what I mean? I looked at that and I'm like, oh, I got to go back. And I went back and I just waited. As soon as I cut and, you know, I paused right there and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
See, that's very creepy to me.
It was brilliant. Like, because they could have just lingered on there for like 5 seconds. And if some producer were sitting there going, we need more of that, or those, you know, that moment.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy got, and I don't think this cost a lot of money. I think he did this very much on the cheap. He had a lot of these actors that were not, they're like, yeah, we'll do it for whatever, you know. And again, this is what we were talking about with Warner Brothers. You know, Warner Brothers did this. It did Sinners. It did One Battle After Another, all in the same year. You know what I mean? So they're like going.
And Warner Brothers, I believe, did The Exorcist. And I was going to make the connection to The Exorcist between those quick cuts.
Nice.
Because if you see those quick cuts were Friedkin. William Friedkin had like those quick cuts.
Yes.
And not to linger on it. It's also reminiscent of J-horror. There's a lot of J-horror that does those quick cuts or the subtle thing. Like there'll be something just creeping in the corner. And it doesn't draw your attention to it. Like if you see it, you're great. If not, so I like that. But so the jump scares can be used cheaply. You know, it's like startling is not scaring. But this movie creates the aura that the jump scares are terrifying. The makeup, the horrific look that the witch has, you know. But there are a few. But I like that it uses them sparingly. Again, like the gore. Sparingly, but effectively. Mm-hmm. And because that gore is so, it's just so visceral.
And it's just real written through the whole thing. I mean, it carries you through it, too. Everything kind of works together, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to go back to Justine's dream, another interesting thing, you probably, you know, everybody probably picked it up, but it was that she has the dream, you know, and then wakes up and then all of a sudden looks up and sees the face. And then it cuts back to her. And she was still awake.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back and the face is gone. That bolsters my psychic
thing. I was going to say, it bolsters your psychic thing. Other than that, we don't know if
that's a magic thing,
we
too.
Don't, we don't know if that's before or after her hair got cut.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's where that
whole thing. Well, yeah, the cut is, you know, that's now she has a connection.
Right, but we don't know if that happened before or after.
All these people.
Yeah. I love the fact that the
well, when she was sleeping in the car and that figure slid by.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
But with the when the junkie, you know, you see the junkie first getting yelled at by the cop saying, "I told you never to come around here again." And then they go back and tell the story of why he's coming there. You know what I mean? And then they meet up in the woods and he's like, "I was coming there to tell everybody where they are," you know.
And he gets stuck with needles again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he's like, do you have hepatitis? I don't think so. I don't know. And probably, I don't know. Not. You know. That guy was, all the actors I thought were super. I really have a problem with any of them. And I love the consumer aspect of it, where they do a lot of the stuff in like supermarkets and liquor stores and these kind of very lit up storefronts. The whole Benedict Wong, where he's walking along and the guy's there like smiling at him, gives him something. And then he's next, all of a sudden he's in this office eating, you know, these things out of the bowl. And you don't really get that connection. You're like, does that guy work there? Or, but then, you know, you go to the house and you get to see them together and you're like, oh, okay, this is what this is. So, but I love that
junkie. That was enjoyable.
The whole junkie thing was great. And then again, when Josh Brolin gets taken over by the witch, it has way more impact because of the bond they start to form, that he believes her. Yeah. And, you know, they both have seen these things and been through these things. And I love the fact that Josh Brolin tackles Benedict Wong into a cooler and knocks himself out, and Benedict Wong gets back up and starts chasing the lady again.
That's like the junkie at the end in the house when he kept smashing him and throwing him and
right
breaking him over, but he kept getting up all the time. It's like, damn, it's just.
Yeah, that's what I said. A lot of that stuff. There's a lot of stuff to watch and to see a second time, you know. And I think even again a third time, if you watch it, you start to look at different stuff.
Which makes it fun, just the detail.
No, yeah, I love it.
The detailing.
And I love the fact that it was just a good. To me, it was just a good movie the first time I watched it. And I, you know, like you, Professor Miller, I have to like detach myself from being an analyst. You know what I mean, or a critic.
Yeah.
And just let the movie wash over me, and then I'll go back. You know, and watch it again if it's something I feel like, you know, there's something that hit there. So I think One Battle After Another was like that. You know, I watched that one time and then I'm like, I had to watch it two more times, you know, and just because I'm like, am I seeing this? Am I getting this? Am I, you know, knowing that you're interacting with an artist who's creating something. And, you know, and I think Sinners was like that, too. You know, there's a lot of stuff I didn't notice the first time I watched it. Just like, you know, we were talking about with the whole guitar thing. And, you know, just because it's all, you just got to know you're dealing with an artist and a really good filmmaker.
And vampires.
And vampires. All right. Is anybody, final thoughts, Dr. Tarr?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's fun talking about it, and it was, check it out.
Dr. Head.
Oh, I do. I love it. I liked it better the second time. I'm looking forward to watching it again. I'm sharing it with Mrs. Dr. Head, and she wants to see it as well.
Make it one of your Halloween, your month of Halloween, your October.
She picked shitty shark movies. I'm like, are you sure?
I'm so sorry.
Oh my god!
I mean, that's
horror into itself.
I go, are you sure, man? Because I mean, I will meet you there. I will be fucking
triple head shark attack.
I am not watching Dino Shark, not baked out of my mind, you know, or six headed shark attack.
What's Corman's Octoshark or
Sharktopus?
Sharktopus.
Sharktopus is actually pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I know. I like Sharktopus. It's very entertaining.
There's a Russian one with.
There's
shark
so many
side
of
the Shark Side of the Moon. I'm serious.
I put Jurassic Shark, Raiders of the Lost Shark.
You can't beat Shark Side of the Moon. You cannot beat that.
No.
That's the title
of
the
fucking It's like meeting shark men on the moon. Like Nazi shark men on the moon. Yeah.
The one where the shark jumps out of the ocean because it's like an old mastodon or whatever they were
Megalodon. Megalodon.
Yeah, where it jumps out and grabs the fucking airliner out of the air.
Yeah.
Pulls it into the ocean. I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like those movies. I go, but man, so I'm going to sneak in some good ones, like Dust Bunny. We're going to watch Dust Bunny and things like that.
What about Sharknado?
Yeah, Sharknado.
We love the Sharknados. Those are great. I've got six headed shark attacks.
Oh, 3D. Oh, that's funny.
That's a company that makes those movies, and they make a bunch of those really movies really cheap, and they make tons of fucking money off of
especially the Sharknados were huge hits. Yeah,
they make tons of money off them because it costs them so little. They do all this terrible special effects and stuff like that. But it's like I would go to a barbecue every year in the summer, and my friend would be like, at the end of the barbecue, would throw in one of the new Sharknados or whatever. And you'd have a bunch of nerds sitting around just making fun of it and laughing their asses off.
Yeah, because like it leans into the comedy and the parody. Yeah. It's beautiful.
And then you're like going, oh, that's what happened to that star. Oh, that's what happened to that star.
That actor.
All right, Professor Feather, final thoughts.
Watch it.
Yeah, it's good. Succinct. Because it's got a psychic aura all over the town.
I'm putting mine out there right now. Theta waves, baby. Theta waves. I know all about this.
Check out my aura.
I just aura'd all over you.
Yeah. Oh, is my aura flowing over you? A wash in Tar's aura.
Oh, the aura. The aura.
The aura. I like that.
Dracula's coming. Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say!
Always.
So I really like this song. It's by a band called Psychonex, which I found on archive.org, and it's called Kalima. It's very Blade Runner to me, and like if you listen to the whole song, it's pretty long and epic. I think it would be like great soundtrack music. And it's in one of my playlists that I listen to.
So. I think more of a Corman movie, 80s.
No.
Nothing wrong with that, so that's pretty cool.
Especially with that synthesizer, sweet.
John Saxon as Space Dog.
In Zombie 3000.
I will emulate you all.
Yes, it's brought to you by Goblin.
I got caught emulating once.
Goblin my knob.
I started emulating when I was 12.
With a sock.
That's right.
Dr. Tar, that was totally inappropriate. Inappropriate.
That's unsanitary.
That's insanitary.
And unseemly.
Oh. Is it?
And you have been experiencing there, find us.
Oh yeah. I was grooving on the music. UnsaneRadio.com. That's all the fuck you need to know, baby. Tar and Feathers Psycho Cinema. Go to our YouTube channel and watch some of the fucking fantastic fucking movies that are fucking there fucking right now.
Let us wash over you.
Break out the mushroom, baby.
He just ensembled.
That's right. I gotta go emulate.
I just disassembled.
Where's
every fucking brownie out there?
I gotta wash that out of my brain if I want to take care of myself tonight.
I say spore! Spore! Spore!
Spray. Yeah, it seems to
give me spore!
Scorlate. Oh, that's my favorite strain.
Even a few trolls got chubbies.
Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on on YouTube. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast on Facebook.
Speaking of chubbies,
contact Lewis at Instagram.
We Freaks. WEEFREEEEKZ. Something like that. I don't spell well. I don't misspell well either. On the Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Boing.